Good afternoon from USC's Annenberg Media Center, and welcome to From Where We Are for Annenberg Radio News. For Thursday, March 22nd, 2018, I'm Nadia Caldwell. First, a news update with Leslie Ombriz.
A powerful storm has triggered evacuation warnings for thousands of Southern California residents and has broken daily rainfall records in numerous cities. Camila Rio speaks to a weather specialist about the phenomenon behind the storm and its implications.
The unusual amount of rainfall pouring in Southern California this week is slowing people down all over the state. The storm causing this rainfall has triggered evacuation orders for more than 30,000 people living near burn scars caused by recent wildfires, because these areas are susceptible to debris and mudfall. The cause of all the rain is called an atmospheric river, but more people know it as the Pineapple Express. I spoke to weather specialist Stephen Sacho from the National Weather Service.
We had a lot of people used to call Pineapple Express, now they're calling atmospheric rivers. It was just a moisture band, basically, from all the way back past Hawaii, that's where it got the pineapple name, all the way towards southwestern California.
The heaviest downpour was expected to come this morning, and forecasters predicted up to 2 inches of rain in Los Angeles County. Forecasters warned that some areas could see 6 inches of rainfall in just 36 hours, an amount that normally takes 6 to 8 months to accumulate. Mountains and foothills can expect 5 to 10 inches of rain. Sato says when the atmospheric river switches directions, the amount of rainfall in the mountains increases.
Today, the orientation of it changed a little bit. It's more of a north-south. What happens is as it comes into the area, that's why we get most of our rainfall amounts or the higher rainfall amounts.
Forecasters continue to warn California residents to remain vigilant, especially in high-risk areas like Santa Barbara and Ventura County. For Annenberg Media, I'm Camila Rios.
Census Bureau figures show Los Angeles has managed to maintain the top spot as the country's most populous county. Coming in at number one, LA County's population was over 10 million last year, and the county only continues to grow. That number nearly doubles that of its closest competition, Cook County, Illinois, with just over 5 million residents. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg released a response yesterday to the social media app's massive data breach. He announced plans to audit apps with suspicious activity, as well as restrict data access even further. He also assured that within the next month, users will see a tool at the top of their feed which will show all apps they've used and ways to revoke data permissions. USC Tech School research scientist John Patrick Allum says users should stay alert about app permissions to protect themselves beyond the steps Zuckerberg has already taken.
While these steps will likely help curb some data sharing, the best advice to Facebook users is to use Facebook's own tools to see what info is being shared with outside developers, and to revoke permission.
But even so, Allum said as long as users stay on social media, there's no way to guarantee complete safety. The LA City Council approved a request for additional funds for homeless camp cleanups. The Bureau of Sanitation asked for more than $800,000, but the council reduced the amount to just under $670,000 in an anonymous vote. The number of cleanup requests for homeless camps and illegal dumping sites nearly tripled between 2016 and 2017 and keeps growing. The greatest demand is in downtown LA, Hollywood, and South LA. The California Supreme Court today ruled that state colleges will be held responsible for failing to protect students from violence in classrooms during curricular studies. Annenberg's own Chris Perfett has more.
Back in 2009, former UCLA student Catherine Rosen sued the university after being stabbed in a campus lab by another student who was known to have paranoid delusions and had committed past acts of violence. In 2015, the lawsuit was dismissed after an appeals court said public colleges have no responsibility to protect students from criminal violence. The new court decision reinstates Rosen's case, but also puts more pressure on state universities to take a more proactive approach to preventing acts of violence against students. For Annenberg Media, I'm Chris Perfett.
Tonight, the rain continues with a chance of thunderstorms before midnight. Lows are in the mid-50s. Showers let up Friday with partly cloudy skies and highs staying in the mid-60s. Those clouds and 60s temperatures will stick around through the weekend before we see sunny skies and 70s all next week. Right now it is 60 degrees outside the Media Center at USC. Mount St. Mary's released a report today about the status of women in the workforce. From 2006 to 2016, the women that get doctorate and professional degrees have increased by 6%. But the percentage of women in STEM fields and media has stayed stagnant. Fewer women work in state government, and they still make up just 4% of CEOs. And while wage equity has gone up, women still make just 88 cents on the man's dollar. Children everywhere may be able to breathe easier today now that toy manufacturers are trying to rescue every child's favorite store, Toys R Us. Chris Chester has the story.
Little Tykes to the rescue. The Van Nuys company behind Little Tykes and Bratz Dolls is leading the charge to save Toys R Us. MGA Entertainment CEO Isaac Larian announced that he and other anonymous investors have personally pledged $200 million to a GoFundMe campaign to help save the store. Investors want to raise $1 billion to go toward a bid to acquire all or a portion of the toy retailer's assets through the bankruptcy process. Larian has also pledged to commit 10% of all profits from Little Tykes sales purchased between now and the end of the GoFundMe campaign. If Toys R Us goes out of business, some 130,000 U.S. jobs would be at risk, in addition to employees at trucking companies and distribution centers. Larian's company is a supplier to Toys R Us, as well as Mattel, which is based in El Segundo. Larian said in a statement, "If there is no Toys R Us, I don't think there is a toy business." The deadline for the GoFundMe campaign is May 28th. For Annenberg Media, I'm Chris Cheshire.
The Metro Board unanimously voted to expand the city's pilot homeless outreach program. The program deploys outreach teams composed of health workers, a mental health clinician, and a formerly homeless person to help the homeless. The pilot program began last May to help the homeless along the Red Line. The multidisciplinary service teams have already engaged over 1,500 individuals since the program began and have linked hundreds of people to temporary and permanent housing. The approved motion would extend the service of outreach teams to other transit lines across LA. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I'm Leslie Ambrose.
Thanks, Leslie. Coming up on From Where We Are, we hear from one reporter who shares her family's story of surviving the Armenian genocide.
This weekend, parents, students, teachers, and their allies are marching around the country for the March for Our Lives event. The march is planned in response to the school shooting in Florida. They are calling for gun control and school safety measures. USC students are rallying tonight. Here with us is Alec Vandenberg, a sophomore studying public policy. He helped create March for SC. Alec, what is March for SC and how did it start?
Hi, thank you for having me today. So March for SC is a collection of groups and students across campus to unify around the issue of starting a dialogue and taking issue about the prevalence of gun violence across this country. It started when a small group of us, including myself, Shear, CJ, Michaela, Mai, and some other students, came together as a group and said, we need to be part of this greater movement. We need to start this dialogue on campus. And this is kind of the fruition of our efforts. So we started a social media campaign. We have a rally tonight. And then we're sending a delegation of students to the March for Our Lives chapter in Los Angeles for a downtown march on Saturday.
And what is the rally adding to the larger March for Our Lives event this weekend?
I think that it's important for us as USC students to add our own unique voices to the contribution because we all have a stake in gun violence, especially not only in our communities, but also in our schools. So we kind of want to instill in students, you know, that activism, that awareness that we are not insulated from the violence of guns and that we need to take action because every day that we don't, children die. And we want to make sure that we are active in this dialogue and are active on and off our campus as well.
And why do you think it's important for USC students to get involved for March for Our Lives movement? And how can they get involved?
I think too often USC is, you know, not considered necessarily a very active or engaged campus, and that's something that we're trying to change. So this movement is just part of also a greater movement to make sure that we have a more active campus because, again, even though we're young, even though some of us can't vote, a lot of us can vote, a lot of us can make a difference in our own communities, and that really starts in our campus.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Alec, and co-creator of March for SC. I'm Christine DeLeon. Back to you, Nadia.
Thank you, Christine. Los Angeles is home to a large Armenian population. In fact, there are Armenian communities in countries all around the world, largely because of the Armenian genocide. Serene Habashin shares her family story of survival from the genocide and her own experience grappling with it.
The son's name, Adanai Goduradze, that means in Adana city, they just burn all the nice house, and it wasn't easy to leave the house and your life, and you don't know where you're going to.
That's my maternal grandmother, Sona Kizrian. The song is about a city that was destroyed during the Armenian genocide. Her parents, my great-grandparents, were survivors of that genocide.
My dad's father was taken in 1915 by Ottoman soldiers. My father was 5 years old, and he was also taken.
His mother paid a Turkish neighbor, who felt sorry for them, to go and bring back her son. Her husband, however, was burned alive along with all the other men from their town. The women, children, and elderly were left to march towards their death through Syria. That's where my great-grandmother ended up, pregnant and with her 5-year-old son and with her sister, who had been raped by a Turkish doctor. Somehow, they survived, and from there, they went on and settled in Lebanon.
It was a clear decision by a government to change the demographics of certain regions of the country for economic, political, and security reasons. And they set about getting rid of their Armenian population. My name is Salpi Khazaryan. I'm the director of the Institute of Armenian Studies at USC.
Turkey, the perpetrating country, continues to deny that what occurred was in fact a genocide. Systematic, intentional, and planned. This has left the descendants of survivors, like me, with an open wound.
Because there has never been acknowledgement of that, we have spent generations of energy, emotion, time, both as individual Armenians and as scholars, trying to prove an obvious fact.
I don't remember when I first learned about the genocide. There was no first time, no shocking revelation. It just always been a part of my memory and who I am.
Should we care if the we are the descendants? There are several reasons to care if this is a choice, if it's something that we have a choice about. And that is that it's not just a part of history, it's a part of what made us who we are. This is also trauma that is inherited through memory that is passed on through the DNA. It's a part of who we are.
In my family and in the Armenian community, the genocide is something we always talk about openly. We hear the stories of what happened to our families from a young age. But for my grandmother, growing up, her parents, who were the survivors themselves, never talked about it.
When we were growing up, my parents and my grandmother, they never wanted to talk about the genocide. When we asked them about it, they talked not too much, only a few words.
It is not unusual for survivors not to speak about the trauma, because each time you put words to it, you're reliving it. On the other hand, when you do put words to it and share it, you're also relieving yourself of some of that burden.
3 generations later, everything started to come out. We want to talk about it now so our kids and grandkids can know what happened. We want to keep them Armenian.
Preserving my Armenian identity is something I think a lot about, and the Armenian community thinks a lot about. Growing up in my house, we were constantly told to speak Armenian. Many of us who are born outside of Armenia learn to speak Armenian as our first language. We have more Armenian schools in Los Angeles, by far, than any other ethnic group does. There is a very real fear of assimilation, of forgetting, of losing, and this is all directly tied to the genocide.
We want the whole world to know what happened and accept it, so it does not happen again to anyone.
I think my great-grandparents would be happy to know that despite the struggle they faced, I now proudly can declare myself Armenian. I am Armenian.
I am. It's not a why. I am. Just as I am so many other things. I am an American. I am a mother. I am. It is a fundamental part of who I am. It's not a question. It's not a choice. It is my identity.
Having great-grandparents who survived the genocide, it's in my blood. And so is the trauma and the anger for not receiving justice. But the determination and the will to survive is also in my blood. I choose it. I choose to be Armenian. For Annenberg Media, I'm Sarin Habesyan.
Picture this. You travel to a distant land with a guidebook by your side. You see the major tourist spots, but you know you are missing the weirder, harder to find spots. What do? Turn to Atlas Obscura. This website has become the clearinghouse of hidden gems the world over. Match Volume contributor Mara Pometti sat down with Dylan Thuris, co-founder of Atlas Obscura, and he started out by recounting a conversation he had with a friend that led to the creation of Atlas Obscura.
Started talking about how there wasn't really a good resource for finding this kind of stuff, this kind of strange outsider art projects or small museums, that travel was very, like, narrow-minded in a way. So we thought it would be nice to, like, make a place where we could put everything interesting we knew, but we could make it open to people to submit the stuff that they, the amazing things that they knew about. And so that's really how it started, like completely organically, like a passion project with like zero business plan in mind.
With Atlas, as you said, you offer a view of the hidden places, stories, discoveries that the majority of people doesn't have the chance to see personally, basically. So do you think that this is what appeals the most about Atlas to people?
You know, it's funny. I think one of the things I really like about Atlas and doing the work, you know, we had a kind of a question when we started, which was like, would we run out of these places? Would we sort of, you know, we'd be like, okay, here's 100 amazing places. And what we found was not only is there kind of a limitless number of these places, but a lot of them are really close at hand. And like one of the best comments we get is when someone writes in and they say, you know, I've lived in this town for 20 years and I never knew this thing was like 10 miles away. And I think the idea is not just that there are amazing things in, you know, Turkmenistan and Peru and wherever you are. First off, wherever you are, probably you think it's familiar and boring, but you're wrong about that. And because like every single place is actually filled with these amazing stories and these kind of hidden wonders. And it's more about adjusting your frame of reference or your framework for the world. And so the really amazing thing has been kind of getting to share that with people and still, you know, now, I mean, we launched in 2009, so we're coming up on 10 years. Like, seeing the things that people send in is incredible. It's sort of unbelievable, like, how much there is in the world. Like, it seems like a simple, obviously the world is huge, but it's been really gratifying to continue to sort of have this experience of like revelation and wonder.
The Atlas Obscura book starts with a quote. The beginning of our happiness lies in the understanding that life without wonder is not worth living. Ibram Joshua Heschel. What that means to you, and is that the message that you want to convey with Atlas?
It's funny, we had a few different quotes, and in a way that's the harshest quote, because we're like, if you don't have any wonder, it's not worth being alive. But I do think we have such a short time, like, in of existence, in a way, and the world is such an unbelievable place, and unfortunately, I think, like, our brains are very good, we are very good at constantly kind of, like, shutting that out, you know? But if you can let it in, like, everything, the world sort of transforms and it becomes, like, a much more beautiful place. And I think it's hard to do these days because everyone is very distracted. I think we're kind of all overwhelmed with information. You know, it's difficult to give yourself the space to have these kinds of, like, moments of, like, transcendent wonder or experience. But it's worth trying to do because I think it's what makes, like, life worth living, you know?
Thank you so much
being
here.
Thanks for making
and
time.
And to share with us all these fantastic stories, really. Thank you so much, Dylan.
Thank you. Anytime.
You hear their voices everywhere, on the subway, on television, and even in your cell phone. In this sound portrait, we hear from a rising voice over artists about breaking into the industry.
My name is Carson Beck. I've been a voice actor, audio engineer, and producer for about 2 years now. Every day I eat, sleep, and breathe voice work in some way.
New LEGO Mars Adventure Set. Explore a new world, build your laboratory, and be the first to discover amazing new creatures.
Versatility, comfort, things we've come to expect from a car. But what if this car took those expectations and just kept going? Nissan.
I just recorded for a game called Death's Gambit that'll be out this spring. Other than that, it's been a lot of audiobooks and other sorts of small projects. Not a lot of stuff that people would heard of, because you don't get the big name stuff until you're a big name voice actor, and I'm still very much on my way up, and that's cool. It's a very minimal process of getting prepared for a spot. It's nothing like, I stand on my head and wait for the inspiration to come. It's nothing like that. It's usually just you go in and you do the job. But the actual sound of the character, the fun part, is looking at if you have a drawing of the character or if you have a spec of what the character looks like and behaves like. You travel around to different parts of your voice. You go up, you go down, and you go to different dialects. Being able to just expand your toolbox and build some characters from there. Let's say I get an audition for a rude teenage boy. So I know rude already, and he's a teenager, so you have to lift your voice up a little bit. And he's rude about things, so the words get shorter. And God, Mom, I don't care. So it's my higher register a little bit, but it's not too high because he's still a guy going through puberty. And if he were to shout, it'd be like, kind of crack his voice because he's getting emotional. If he had braces, that's a different thing. So now he's rude and he has braces. What are you talking about, man? Get off my playground. What the freak are you talking about? Or that same character is from the South and he's a little bit dumb. So he's still a teenager on the playground, but he has braces and he's dumb. And there's the actor part of it, of knowing the backstory and finding the beats and all of that stuff.
As an age of peace comes to a bloody end, we must take back what once was ours. We need your help, warrior. Join our ranks and prove your skills in battle.
The editor stood up with a sigh. What a pity it is you're not a writer of stories, he said.
Advice for a newcomer. I would say to be hungry, to put it in three words, be a sponge is the best thing I've ever done in terms of getting into this business and being able to get where I am now. So that sense of always growing, always adventuring, finding something new. Most people in my community, I would say, they think they have the greatest job in the world. And the fact that we all think that, we all get together and just have a blast. You know, you wake up every day and it doesn't feel like work. I still feel like I'm playing every day.
That sound portrait was produced by Daniela Silva. Would it surprise you to know that one of LA's best-known streets got its name from a simple spelling error? Today on Street Smarts, Regina Pullins takes us through the history of La Cienega Boulevard.
La Cienega is more than a character on the Proud Family.
Who is that? La Cienega? We go back all the way to the sandbox.
La Cienega is a historical street that runs about 13 miles throughout Los Angeles. So let's dive into the history of how La Cienega Boulevard got its name. Before its fancy restaurants and boutiques, La Cienega Boulevard was a huge freshwater wetland. In 1843, the Mexican governor gave the mayor of Los Angeles a plot of the land for his cattle. Mayor Vicente Sanchez called it Rancho La Cienega, which means swamp ranch in Spanish. But the mayor misspelled the word swamp.
Excuse me, but you're wrong.
In Spanish, the correct word for swamp is cienaga, with an A, not an E. The mayor unknowingly misspelled the ranch, and now it is forever known as La Cienega. As of today, La Cienega Boulevard is famous for the Beverly Center, upscale restaurants, and now the misspelling of La Cienega Boulevard. Alvarado, with Street Smarts, I'm Regina Pullen.
A UCLA study concludes that one dreadful symptom of pregnancy may have a large part to do with your genes. While most women experience morning sickness at some point during their pregnancy, UCLA researchers found that the most severe cases are caused by genes that play a role in the development of placenta. Some women even have to be hospitalized. The researchers found no evidence that pregnancy hormones were the cause of extreme nausea. Tis the season of welcoming new Trojans to the USC family. Today, USC admissions mailed out decisions to undergraduate candidates. As incoming students are awaiting the big day, we look back with current freshmen Sarah Richardson and Matthew Schell on that life-changing moment.
When my parents had just brought in the mail, and they're like, oh my gosh, Sarah, today's the day. And like the second he pulled it out, I just started crying immediately. So I pulled myself together and my mom was videotaping the whole thing and I was just opening it. It was just pure joy.
I saw the mail person outside the mailboxes and he went back in his truck and got out the red envelope, and the joy I felt like getting that, that's when I knew that like I wanted to come to USC.
And while some are waiting to receive a letter ushering them into campus, other Trojans are celebrating who will be giving them a warm farewell. Annenberg announced that TV host, philanthropist, actress, and overall superhuman Oprah Winfrey will speak at the school's commencement ceremony in May, happening at the Shrine Auditorium. Students have until April 15th to reserve up to 4 tickets. That's it from where we are today. Today's show was produced by Kaylee Wells. Our associate producer is Alexandra Mason. Chris Perfett is our board operator. The theme music was composed by Derek Renfro. Subscribe to From Where We Are on iTunes and follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Annenberg Media. Until next week, I'm Nadia Caldwell. And for all of you graduating this May, don't forget to reserve your tickets to the 2018 Annenberg Satellite Commencement Ceremony, where the esteemed Miss Oprah Winfrey will be guest speaking. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great evening.